All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we have with us this evening Marshall Masters, and got something really, really interesting for you. And he and I talked about it. He showed me some of his pictures, and I've been over to his website. I took a look at the pictures. You're going to be amazed by this, but I think you will. I hope you will be. And he has some research that he's conducting and some articles that he's written, video that he's done, all about something I bet most of you don't know about. I had not heard of it. I hear about a lot of stuff every day, but this is one that just slipped past me. I didn't know about this. And so I was fascinated. And I'm delighted that Marshall is with us this evening. Marshall, hang on. I'm getting some of the controls set here. But there we go. Welcome back. We're glad to have you.
It's good to be back. I love the music. Wow, you got such great music on your show.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, all of it is from independent artists. I don't have any of the commercial stuff. It's all independent artists. They're good, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's not formula. I mean, that's what I love about it.
Yeah,
really. You know, this is really original stuff. They're not, you know, hacking out the same mold.
Yeah, really. All right, Marshall, I want us to start where we ended last time, okay?
Okay.
Now, where we ended last time was talking about December 21st. It was upcoming. Mm-hmm. We didn't have long to go. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, I don't think there's going to be much happen on that date. You basically said the same thing, but you said there is something coming. There's something going to happen. But you didn't think that December 21st was a drop-dead date. So far, am I correct?
Yeah. But I still think, though, that the Mayan calendar prophecy was a very good prophecy and was very successful, because the whole point of prophecy, Kevin, is to get people to look up, look around. And if there's something that really did that number, it was the Mayan prophecy. Yeah, I mean, you know, the media really humped on it, but still the same. You know, what we have to understand is that the universe is not unfolding at the speed of human expectations.
Right.
And on December 21, 2012, a lot of people said we were going to wake up and sing Kumbaya and buy the world a Coke. No. At least not in North Korea.
Yeah.
You know, it was spin up the nukes there. But still the same, though. It was in the... And for me... Planet X and the Mayan calendar were never directly connected.
Okay.
But December 21, 2012 was simply a tsunami wave of interest. Mm-hmm. And you had to ride the wave or you'd be left behind. So a lot of folks really were going to 2012 because that was really getting the focus, getting the attention, and people are thinking. Now, what I'm finding was that, you know, first off, I got up on December 21, 2012 and did what I told you I would do on the show when I was with you last time. I made coffee.
Yeah.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very good cup of coffee, and I sat out and enjoyed it. But it was towards the end of that month that I got an email from an expatriate in Costa Rica. And he lives at the foothills of a volcano called Turrialba, and it's an active volcano. It erupted in 2012. It's still venting and active today. It's on the red list, and you can't even really go up there. The government has closed it off because there's so much toxic fumes up there. You just, no way. But there is a companion volcano within about 50 clicks called Even a little higher up and a little further west has even better viewing conditions than Turrialba. And we've been asking for folks to go out there and give us a boots on the ground, independent observation of what we have been tracking from Turrialba, which is an object I have dubbed Blue Bonnet because it reminds me of a blue bonnet, the colors. And what happened was this expatriate, it was the last week of December, and he sent it to me, and I, you know, sent me one image, and he had a moonrise. I said, no, it's all right. 10 down, Kitty Carlisle. And so he came back with another one. You know, this is the big difference that I am seeing with Two Suns and the Size images, is that for many years, 90%, and I am being modest at 90%, was disinformation planted by paid disinformationalists. And they were the ones doing the cell phones, you know, and they'd grab a cell phone and wave it around. Looky, 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 looky. And you'd get Two Suns, and they'd throw it up on YouTube, and they were totally untraceable. You know, they always had the same MO, you know, hit and run fruiters. And for years, I watched him inoculating the public on imagery that they wouldn't believe their own lying eyes when they saw something. They would immediately go, sundog, 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 sundog. Yeah, like sundog, like a mantra. God, it worked. You know, laugh, it worked. And but this thing came in, and I started observing it. And it got my attention, and first thing I noticed about it was I said, hold on a second. If this is a reflection, why does it have a terminator? All right. Now, what a terminator is that fine line between the daylight side of a body and the night side of a body. The moon, for example, always has a terminator, except when it is a full moon. And, you know, there's that, like, lights on, wax off. You know, that's the terminator right there. Lights on, lights off. This thing had a terminator, and the daylight side of the object was correctly facing the sun. That got my attention. That's not your typical reflection. And so I started watching it. I was struggling with it at first, but this gentleman was very excited about it. He's a college professor, an administrator who's retired down in Costa Rica. And so he kept after me. He said, look, just sit down for an hour and watch it, because you can watch it live. And are we there? I think I've lost my... Is my video with you?
It just started back up.
Okay, good. So I just sat and I watched it for an hour. And that was when I'm going, wow, this thing is not moving like a reflection. I could see all of the other reflections, and they're moving like reflections. They do the hoochie-coochie dance. Not this thing, all right? It moves like a natural celestial object. And so we started a study on it in early January. And we put up our first video, Object of Interest, as seen from Turrialba. And that video has been up on YouTube. And it's just had over 50,000 views. And it's very popular. People are watching it, and they're following other updates that we have. And we're just amassing a huge amount of information on this thing.
I put up a picture of it off of that video. I took a still shot off of that video, and I put up a picture of this object. Folks that are watching our channel can see it in the sky.
You want me to share my I can share my desktop with you, and if you want, your viewers can actually, listeners and viewers, you can see what I see.
Yeah.
You can see what I work with on my desktop. You want me to do that?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. Let's see.
It looks spherical in this picture.
Well, it is spherical. It always does come on spherical. Now, just so you know, I'm going to turn off my video here so we can go full screen on this.
Yeah, that's okay.
And I am going to share my screen. There you go. Now, my screen should be popping up on your side very shortly here.
Okay. Now, I may have to change a couple of things here to make that work, but go ahead and start talking about it, and I will get this to work.
All right. So anyway, I've got a team of people working on this with us, and it's a very, very good team. We've probably amassed, I think I lost track at 1600 or 1700 images, because we're steadily capturing all the time, have been since January. There's always going to be a member of our team online checking Turrialba every day. And when you have got my screen coming in, let me know.
I do, but I have something extraneous coming in too. So hang on, I'll get it.
Okay.
At the moment, those who are watching are not seeing the extraneous anything.
Okay.
I don't know if this is going to work, actually.
It's a little dicey?
It's a little dicey, and I don't know why. We're only getting, on my Skype monitor, I can see exactly your full screen.
Right.
But our broadcast software is picking up about one quarter of that. I don't know why.
Mm. Okay.
Well, we'll just put your smiling face back up there, and we can refer to the picture of it in the sky.
All right. And let me just turn off the sharing here. And that's a pity we couldn't get that to work.
Yeah, I've used it before. I don't know.
Well, I've used this, and I'm going to get my video on. If you have Skype and you get the premium service, my wife calls to Russia all the time, so it was a no-brainer for me.
Mm-hmm.
But you get to share your desktop with people when you're in a video conference call. Mm-hmm. And this is a tool that we use extensively in our research team because we're batting back and forth and looking at stuff.
Yeah.
And so we have what we're working on currently. We've done several studies, and the one we're working on right now is a progression study. That's the nice thing about having as much imagery as we do on this object. Mm-hmm. And if you tell me which one you're going to put up for your listeners there, and
well,
then I'll talk to that.
Yeah, it's a picture of the, we can see the volcano in the foreground.
Okay.
And we see the object up in the sky above it.
Right.
And that's it. We got a blue sky and we got a volcano down there.
All right. The what you can do is if the listeners are out there on their computers, you can just type in this address, twosunsinthesky.com, go directly at that, and we can talk from that page.
Now, let me ask you, this object that's up there,
mm-hmm.
have you been able to determine its distance from Earth and its size?
Well, this is a substantial object. And it's growing in size, what our initial findings and looking through everything. I would say I began looking at it in January, and from January through to the middle of last month, I was really watching it steadily go north of the ecliptic and grow in size. And then, interestingly enough, about the middle of last month, it arced over. So,
what do you mean it arced over?
Well, what we're seeing with this is an object that moves naturally through the sky, moves just the same thing as our planets would move. The only difference is that it moves, it cuts against the grain, if you will. And, you know, let me just use a couple of cassette tapes here to kind of illustrate the point.
Okay, let me get you back on the screen here.
All right. So, I'm just, here's a couple of DV tapes, and so our planets orbit around the ecliptic, so they're going this way.
Okay.
All right. This object is going this way.
Got you.
All right. It doesn't move like anything. And, you know,
now,
for those
who are listening, let me describe that. Think of the planets orbiting horizontally around the ecliptic. Mm-hmm. And this object is orbiting, but vertically around, well, not around the ecliptic, but up and down the ecliptic.
It's going up and down. We have got imagery on this going actually back to 2010. There was an engineer in Costa Rica called Rodolfo who posted a lot of really good motion study videos. And this was taken on older SD camera. Let me just kind of give your listeners a quick update on Turrialba. So Turrialba is, you're up around 10,000 feet, and its companion, Irazu, is almost 1,000 feet higher. Now, it has a very unique view to the west. There's a surveillance camera on there, and it's a high-definition surveillance camera with a very good lens. It's pointed west by southwest. And, you know, you have that picture of any of the pictures that you have up there, and you're seeing the rim of the volcano.
Mm-hmm.
What you're seeing is the western rim of the volcano. And if you look straight in the middle, there's like a little peak.
Mm-hmm.
All right. At the base of that left, the left side of that peak, that is due west. And we were able to determine that because Barbara, our archivist, was getting up early to catch sunrise captures. Because remember, we're dealing with sunsets, not sunrises. Now, there's an important point, is that any object that's going to be close to the sun, the only time you can observe it is going to be before sunset, before sunrise, in that twilight zone, if you will. And so she got up early, and it was an absolutely stellar day. And we got a shadow of the volcano that, boom, gave us a dead reckoning on due west. And so right at the base of that small peak is due west. Now, the next thing about it is that the horizon...
Hang on, because we have a break taking over.
Okay.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back right after this break. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Marshall Masters. We're talking about an object that is in the sky and visible with the naked eye in South America. And Marshall, tell us again the location of this place.
Turrialba is on the 10th parallel. So it's close to the equator, and that's really important for viewing. And it's in Costa Rica. About the center of the country.
Uh-huh.
And it has a clear and obstructed view to the west. On a very good day from Turrialba, you can see the Pacific Ocean. And that is really important because people are always asking me, why is it they can see it from the volcano, but we can't see it from where we're at here, wherever that happens to be? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, first off, this object, and I believe this is an object that is the outermost object of a mini constellation that is being tracked by the 00 Skyview team on YouTube. And they go to a mountaintop, they have good telescopes, infrared, and they have been tracking a mini constellation entering up from the south, which is looks very, very much the same as the imagery that was released in 2008, the stories that we broke on the South Pole Telescope disclosure videos. Now, those videos, those stories really died quickly because, as I've said often, the first rule of Planet X research is the closer something comes to the truth, the faster it disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's things that, you know, if it's good and it stays up a long time, maybe it's not so good. So this is in a spot where it can see it on the, you know, you're talking about, there's not much out there. It's mostly Pacific. It's mostly ocean.
Yeah.
You're going to have Caracas, Venezuela out there around 3,000 feet. Ho Chi Minh City. All right. They're just a few feet above sea level. They're not going to see it. The whole point here is that you have to be above the clouds right now. And that's where the visibility is there. Below the clouds, visibility is really difficult for us because we have chemtrail spraying. That is quite extensive. There's an increasing amount of vapor coming up from all of the weather changes that we're having. So there's a pretty thick soup, plus all of the pollution that we put up, that is obscuring it. However, what makes Turrialba very unique is its height and its westward orientation. We looked at other volcanoes to see if there were other webcams, and of course, I was myself a few years ago in Hawaii on vacation. I went to Haleakala and to watch a sunrise in the morning. What I can tell you is that once you see the sun rising up through clouds, that's quite a stunning thing. And what you realize is that now you know why all of these big observatories like to get at the top of these very tall stratovolcanoes, is that you can see more clearly and further than anyone else could possibly imagine below the cloud layer.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So that's the big thing. Now, the other thing is, it's, and this is an interesting aspect of the Turrialba webcam, or the surveillance camera. It's not a webcam. A webcam is significantly much lower resolution. This is something where it's a standard high-definition camera with a mounted lens in an enclosed cabinet, and it's designed to operate in a very hostile environment. But it is pointed slightly downwards. The eastern rim of Turrialba is higher than the western rim. And so consequently, the camera is tilted downwards just a little bit. Give us that good view. Well, because it does that, what Turrialba has is essentially almost an extra hour of sunset. So consequently, the folks in Costa Rica, down in San Jose, Costa Rica, which is further west of Turrialba. Now, that's around, I think, 3,800 feet, give or take. But the point is that when you're at that altitude, you're seeing the nap of the Earth. You're not looking out enough that you can see actually beyond the land to see the ocean beyond Costa Rica, as you can from Turrialba. And so they, consequently, when folks in Costa Rica, in San Jose, are sitting down to an early dinner, and there's not much left for them to watch, things are just really perking up on top of the volcano, because it's got that extra extended time. And this is what has really proved to be of great value in terms of doing this study. It's what makes the location unique. Other volcano surveillance cameras or webcams are either going to be pointed to the east because people like to see those sunrise photos, or they're pointed right down into the bowels of the beast. You know, the point being that if you've got a camera there, you want to just know when it's time to start running downhill. Excuse me, screaming, feet don't fail me now.
Yeah.
Now, with Turrialba, and what I want to point out to your listeners, if you go to my site, youwusa.com, and link into that and look at it, you can watch this thing every day, just like we do. That's what we ask people to do. Just watch it. Don't get in there and look at a couple of still images and, you know, go off half-cocked. We get a lot of that. What we're asking folks is just sit there for an hour and watch it. And that's when you get a sense of it. You get a sense that it moves as a natural object. And what's really interesting is it moves as a natural celestial object because it's going to fall off the horizon as we're going to sunset. But it does not track directly with the sun. This object is not in orbit around the sun. It is in orbit around something else. And that's what we're working on next in our progression study.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. Now, you said you think it may be the outermost object of a mini constellation?
Yeah. Constellation. For years, we've been talking about Planet X and saying it could be any number of things, which was a fair statement.
Sure.
But, you know, what we're seeing with all the imagery and what's being reported, the disclosure videos, the live image tracking that that team, the SkyView team, is doing, this is a mini constellation. It's got its own star, a companion to our sun. It's a small brown dwarf, and which means it doesn't show up until it's close enough in to really light up. Otherwise, the only way you can see it is with infrared, and that's how SkyView has been tracking it for some time, posting their videos and putting up coordinates. The problem that SkyView has is the same problem that we have. We're observing it. We're seeing objects in real time. We're posting the information. And the general public response is people look at that for about 2 seconds, and then they shut the door, close the closet, lock it, jump under the covers, turn on all the lights, and they're safe and snug knowing that the monsters can't get them if the monsters can't see them.
Okay,
that's how it works.
Well, I'm curious about this notion about the mini constellation. Mm-hmm. One of the stories that I have heard, one of the descriptions I've heard, mm-hmm. of Nibiru, I'm going to give you two of them. One, it is a great big planet, and it's got seven moons.
Right.
Another is it's a planet in orbit around a brown dwarf amongst seven other planets, but it is the one that is occupied. Do either one of those seem to match what you're looking at?
What I would say is that we are looking at a mini constellation with a brown dwarf, call it Nemesis. That's the name that was used back in the 50s and 60s when we were looking at a second sun,
okay.
companion to our own. And it is going to have satellites in orbit around that, which will be depending on how you want to define planets and moons. All right. Mm-hmm. You know, for a long time, Pluto was a planet. Now it's a minor planet.
Well, it's still a planet.
It's still a planet, but you got to bear in mind that Pluto is only about 60% of the size of our own moon. Our moon's a lot mm-hmm. larger than Pluto is.
Yeah,
the question is, how do you define it? So I think it's easier just to say that you have. You have a brown dwarf with seven satellites around it. And those satellites are going to be of any relative size. Now, Nibiru is going to be one of those satellites. It's going to be a planet. And with Nibiru, remember the name translates to planet of crossing. So this is something that comes the closest into our system, the closest to Earth.
But this object that we're looking at in the picture is not Nibiru, right?
All I can tell you is that right now it is an object that is in orbit around something else. We're trying to, we now finally have amassed enough image data that we feel that we can at least get a rough plot on what its orbit is, because we have, clearly we have signs of a semi-major axis. That's something that's happened in the last few weeks that really surprised us.
What does that mean?
Semi-major axis is, let me see if I have something that, well, all right, we have a long ellipse, all right? And let's imagine we have gone to an amusement park, and you know the ride, the whip, the one that's got the two big turnbuckles on each end, yeah, and the long track going around?
Mm-hmm.
And then we get into that. And what do? When it's taking the long ride around, you know, we're just sitting there, bored to tears, trying to look excited for everybody that's standing there and waving at us. But when we get to that turn, boy, that's when it's fun. Whoop! We whip around. And then we go da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then whoop! We whip around. So, think about those turnbuckles as being your semi-major axis in orbit.
Okay.
Long elliptical orbit. And then the minor axis is where you're bored stiff and waving at the family.
Okay.
All right. So what we're seeing in the last 4 weeks is we began noticing in February that when we first started observing it in early January and logging it, it had just crossed from the southern skies below the ecliptic to north of the ecliptic, and we tracked it continually moving north, and then it reversed direction. So we know that that's one end of its orbit. We have imagery from 2010 that puts it way south of the ecliptic. And we're using this term, and probably for some of your listeners, let me just explain. The ecliptic,
well, I'll tell you what, hang on to that, because we're okay, only 10 seconds from a break. So when we come back, tell us about what is the ecliptic, okay?
Okay.
All right.
It's real important.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we will return right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Marshall Masters. Quick reminder, the Kevin Smith Show is 100% listener supported. We're still just a little shy on our budget that we had to raise for this past month. So if you got an extra buck or two, click that donate button and make sure we're here tomorrow night. We need you to do that, because we don't sell advertising. Okay? Marshall, you were explaining to us the ecliptic, what that term means, and so let's go back to that.
Okay, well, I found a high-tech device for this that might help.
Okay.
It's my video clapboard, but it's also a Marx-a-lot.
Okay.
All right, now, let's go ahead and let's imagine, right, that is the sun.
Okay, so we have a circle, and we have a horizontal line.
That line is the ecliptic.
Okay.
Think of the line. It goes through the center of the sun. It's like the sun's equator. And you take imaginary point in the middle of the sun, and you make a concentric ring going all the way out to the 12 constellations of the zodiac, and that is the ecliptic. But a lot of people confuse the ecliptic with the horizon as we see space from Earth. And folks have to remember, our planet is tilted, all right, on its axis.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently, we don't see the ecliptic this way. That's where people always make a false assumption, gets them in a lot of trouble. I see that with a lot of the debunkers out there. They just don't know how to look at it. And so consequently, the ecliptic is really more like at a 45-degree angle, but it's always varying. Depending on where we're orbiting, the ecliptic is always swooping back and forth just like this. All right?
Okay.
So the bottom line is, when you are looking at the object, if it is to the left of the sun, that is from the viewpoint of Turrialba, all right, from the Cameron Turrialba. That's what we always talk about. You know, I don't talk about it from the viewpoint of the folks in Poughkeepsie.
Okay.
All right. It's Turrialba. And so to the left of the sun is south of the ecliptic. To the north of the sun, all right, is going to be to the right. So the thing folks need to understand is that all of the planets in the system, we, you know, Venus, Mars, Earth, all orbit on or very near to the ecliptic. And Mercury is like within 3.5 degrees of the ecliptic. This object, you know, it's in regions of space that would be impossible for any of the known planets to go to. Also, for those that are saying it's Venus, I'm going, well, right now, Venus is... if you want to see Venus, you're going to have to go to Sears and get the mother of all auger bits and drill it through the sun, because that's the only way you can see it. You're going to have to drill a hole through the sun to see Venus. It's not Venus. It's not the moon. All you have to do is look at find the tables online for when there's going to be moonrise, and all that. Usually what we're finding is that the moon is rising early in the mornings around 6 o'clock at Turrialba. So the observations we're making are in the afternoon. The object usually appears around somewhere between 2 and 3, depending on viewing conditions. And
oh, that's 2 and 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Turrialba town time.
Which is, that's right, which is CST. And that's not, that is straight the CST. It's not the time that is, they do not do daylight savings time down there.
Okay.
So when you're looking at it and it says, you know, 16:31, you know that you're looking at 4:31 p.m. CST Turrialba time.
Okay.
All right. And we watch it, when the object appears, it materializes naturally. It just doesn't pop up. And it dematerializes or vanishes just the same way. So it comes in and goes out of the viewing. When we are viewing it, it tracks normally. It's going to be, if you sit there and you watch it for a full afternoon, you're going to watch it, you know, just moving down in this direction like this.
Moving down at an angle to the right. Yeah.
And it'll be moving to the right, or it'll be moving off to the left. Right now, we're watching it moving off to the left. We're watching it going south of the ecliptic again. And it's still up in the northern skies, but very close to crossing the ecliptic and going south again. So that we find is very interesting.
Okay, and go ahead, and then I've got a question where I'm gonna draw you into the well, not a debate with me, but I'm going to draw you into dangerous waters here.
Go for it.
Well, go ahead with what you're saying, and then I'll do that.
All right. So what we're doing is we watch it, and people are always saying, well, reflection, reflection, reflection. First off, I have been watching, and this is since 2003, I've been watching a steady diet of disinformation pumped into YouTube with these two sun videos so that people would get going with the sun dog mantra. I don't do any of that. All right. I'm always looking for, give me something that's a hard baseline. Give me some hard evidence. Now, folks usually also, they have misconceptions about the ecliptic, but they also have misconceptions about how these images are being captured by this surveillance camera. We tend to think of it like the old 35 millimeter cameras that are, you know, it's getting harder to find processing and film for.
Yeah.
In those cases, you take a picture and that whole 35 millimeter frame is instantly, you know, that's it. Boom. It's all there. All one big piece of celluloid. Not so with CCD and CMOS cameras. These use chips. Now, I'm sure that you have seen like video walls.
Yeah.
Where you'll, this is an important thing, so I'll just draw it. So, sorry for the crude drawing. And you know those matchbooks that said draw the dog? They never answered me. But anyway, you know, you see the video walls. And this could be like multiple monitors, 6, 8, 10 large screen monitors. But one person dominates the whole thing. And what you see are those lines in between all the monitors, because that's physically, they're physically separated from each other, right?
Right.
Well, that is the same thing that happens with your camera CCD, is that it has sensors. And each of these sensors are its own little block. And depending on the resolution of the camera is going to determine how many actual pictures are on each of those sensors. So I just call them pixel blocks. It's an easier term for people. And what we found was that if you have reflections or refractions, very quickly, a reflection is you look in a mirror, that's a reflection. All right. Refraction is something you get eyeglasses for, to bend the light so that you can focus it with your eyes. But when you have reflections and refractions, these images that you're going to capture are not going to create what I call hot sensors. They're not hot objects. What we find with this object is that it'll get into anywhere from between 2 to 6 sensor blocks, and when it does, the clouds in front of the object have a much greater exposure than any of the clouds that are in the surrounding area around it. All right, so we're not looking at dances with clouds. We just don't bother with that. I go look at it, fine. If it's setting off the sensor, that means that where that object is being viewed is generating more light than in the surrounding area.
Okay.
And if it's generating more light, the simple fact is reflections and refractions do not generate light. All right.
Yeah, they happen in the lens and in the camera.
That's right. That's right.
And so what you're looking at is the effect of the light from this object on the clouds and surrounding area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, got you. All right, let's go to dangerous waters, man.
All right, let's go.
All right. The Hopi Indians talk about a blue kachina, and everybody's always wondering, pardon me, what is a kachina? Well, regardless of what it is, I don't think this object is Nibiru, and I don't think you do, because Nibiru is supposed to be red. This object is blue, and we have to step away for a break while we're away. Formula answer, is it the blue kachina? And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm delighted you're here. My sincere sympathy to you for whatever kept you from the first hour. And my sincere best hopes, wishes, dreams, and prayers that you never suffer that tragedy again. My guest this evening is Marshall Masters. We're talking about an object out in space. It's not in our atmosphere. It is a celestial object. It is visible from a particular place in Costa Rica, and from looking at pictures of it, a picture of it, from a surveillance camera that overlooks a volcano. And I asked the question before we went to break. I said, let's go to dangerous waters for you, Marshall. And that is, you know, there's this Hopi prophecy about the blue kachina. And I said, I don't think this object that we've looked at is going to be Nibiru, because that's supposed to be red. This thing looks like it's blue. So what do you say? Is this the blue kachina? And if so, what is a kachina?
Well, the Hopi have it's the blue kachina prophecy. And what the blue kachina prophecy is that we see a celestial object and it unmasks, it appears very suddenly, which is consistent with you know, the fact that this thing's coming around from behind the sun. And following that is the red kachina. The blue kachina is the harbinger. When you see that, basically, you know, dying time is near. And that'll happen when you see the red kachina appear. So the blue kachina could be any number of things. That's the reason why we're doing the progression study, to see if we can see if there is a potential link between this and a constellation, mini constellation that Skyview is tracking, because they have five objects that they're seeing with their instruments, but we know that there's seven actually that are going around this star.
How do you know there's seven?
Because that's what we saw with the disclosure videos from the South Pole Telescope. I'm the guy who broke the story on that back in 2006, I recall. And then it was in 2008, there was a series of disclosure videos, and these were the number of objects, and there were two different disclosure videos, one from Nibiru Shock 2012 and another one from DNIR something. It was a very complicated name. In both cases, the accounts were compromised pretty quickly. And in the case of the second one, which was something that, this fellow had been told about this by a friend who was actually stationed there at Scott Adamson Station. And so when he put it up, it was up for probably about 14 hours, and YouTube not only pulled the video, but they terminated the account. So that was a pretty fast shutdown. I was fortunate because someone on the inside who understood what was going to happen tipped me off, and I was able to snag a copy of that video before it disappeared. So for me, there was confirmation. People say, when am I going to see it? I've been watching it since 2008. I just go back and look at those videos. What we're seeing is this. Now, what Skyview has said is that there's possible orbitals that extend to the region of space that we're currently observing Bluebonnet, this object that I call it. And it could very well be that Bluebonnet is the blue kachina that precedes the red kachina, which would be Nemesis, the dark star. And, you know, on that, I mean, I have to say that I have to speculate at this point. I will say that throughout the study, my rule has been, believe nothing. Observe everything. That's it. Anytime somebody says, prefaces a comment with, I believe, that's it. I stop listening.
Me too.
Yeah, right. Because they stop thinking.
But I believe I'm going to ask you this question, okay? What the heck is a kachina?
A kachina is a doll that represents a god. It's a totem. All right? So you go into a Catholic church and you see a statue of Jesus or Mary, the Hopi equivalent is a kachina doll.
Okay.
And the Hopi have a special ceremonial lodge that they construct to look for the appearance of the blue kachina. One of the things I have found is that if you want to start interviewing Native American speakers on the topic, the real guys, not the ones that were like one-fifth whatever Geronimo by a second or third cousin, I'm talking about someone that's living on the reservation. They're hard to find. They just simply have given up on talking to white men, and they're just doing what they're going to do to prepare and quietly going about their business, which is probably a smart thing for them to do. But one of the things in this ceremonial lodge that they do is they're looking to see a double retrograde motion of Venus in a certain part of the sky. And that actually did happen in December of last year, or actually before that. But in 2012, that's when there was that double retrograde that they were looking for occurred. And a retrograde is where the planet, as it's moving through the sky, just because of the way we're orbiting and the planet is orbiting the sun, it would look like it's moving backwards through the sky. You know, you've heard astrologers, when people are going, whoa, I'm having a bad month, and somebody goes, Mercury's in retrograde. That's it. If you're in California, that's the code word. If Mercury's in retrograde, forget about it. Okay. So, and it's really not going backwards through the sky. It just looks that it's going backwards through the sky. It's an optical illusion.
Okay.
But that's what they're looking for. And even as an optical illusion, it's useful because you look to see when it's going to happen, because it's a very rare event, particularly a double retrograde.
Okay, so
that did happen.
All right, so what is the red Kachina? I mean, what do the Hopi say is going to happen when red Kachina appears in the sky?
Game over. That's it.
For the whole planet?
It's the end of life as we know it. The red Kachina brings with it a lot of disaster. The Hopis have legends going back that they were saved by the ant people. Extraterrestrials intervened and helped their ancestors to go down into the bowels of the earth and to save. And it's going to be a rough time. Now, you don't have to even go into Hopi prophecy. I mean, if you really get into Christian eschatology, it paints a much darker picture even, and much more clearer. Because in the Bible, it says that, you know, the sun is going to roast the planet. All right? And that's something that's in Revelation. So in Christian eschatology, we see it, interestingly enough. It's also in Muslim eschatology. Matter of fact, their eschatology really gets more. Eschatology is the study of end times.
There you go.
All right.
Yeah.
So this is what they're doing. Now, it's important to note that there were many Hopi spokesmen that were saying Comet Holmes was the blue Kachina. Comet Holmes appeared in October 2007. So this is 5 years ago. And for a prophecy, that's really a long separation of time. But Holmes was very bright, very blue. This was a comet that, you know, briefly became the largest object in the solar system. So it was very, very stunning, very large, but it didn't last very long. What I think that the Hopi are talking about with the blue Kachina and the red Kachina is when you see the blue Kachina, it's not going to come and go like a flash in the pan. You're going to see it. You're going to see it for a while. And you're going to know that whatever's following behind it will be the red Kachina. And when that comes in close, that is when there's going to be solar flares, volcanism, seismicity, just a whole series of events. You know, again, going back to Christian eschatology, it says that, hey, you know, no two stones are going to be left sitting on top of each other. Every structure on the planet is going to be flattened. And if you use the two in combination, and also with other prophecies from the past, the Colburn Bible and the such, then what you have here is something that is going to be rather devastating, and it's going to appear and come on very quickly. Because, again, it's coming in from behind the sun. So when it does show up, it's going to show up almost suddenly, particularly for people that are below the cloud layer. And that's even with
below the cloud layer?
Below the cloud layer, below the clouds.
Uh-huh.
Okay. You know, first off, our ability to see the sky is really, really impinged. We have, because of all of these climatic changes, you know, where's all the snow coming from? Where's all the rain coming from? All right.
Well, I understand what you're saying. Because
of
the clouds.
It's coming from water vapor that's going up into the sky. That is going to make viewing difficult. You have.
So what you're saying, though, then, is that by the time people see the red one, it's really close because they're not getting to see it early because of the clouds.
They're not going to see it early because of the clouds. They're going to see it later. And yeah, one thing I have to say, frankly, you know, in doing the research, is that, and I'm sure that the Skyview guys are feeling it the same too, it doesn't matter what we find. It really doesn't matter one way or the other, because we can find it, we can say, here it is, we've got the image, it won't matter.
No.
People will not believe it until they see it with their own two eyes, and that, after a long period. I mean, the first time they see it, they're going to go, gee, golly, hey, Phyllis, what's that? All right? But over time, you know, it'll take time for it to settle in. Yeah, a good example is, did you ever see the movie Melancholia?
Yeah.
And in Melancholia, the guy is got his wife believing that this planet that's going to smash into Earth is going to miss Earth. And he has her going on that for the longest time until she finally wises up and realizes that he's doing that because so he can, when it does smash into the planet, he can be with his lover in town. And so it's a mind game for people. Mm-hmm. It's really hard. It's really hard to look at that. It's something we have never seen before. We'll never see it again in our lifetimes. We won't want to. And so right now it's just documenting it and studying it as researchers. But in terms of doing something effective that is going to save lives, and that's really what our mission's all about, is survival. Okay? Uh-huh. We're just really devoted to helping people who would intend to fight for their lives.
Okay, but just let's also make it clear here that you're not saying that this object is the blue Kachina or that the red Kachina is behind it. You're saying that's a possibility.
These are possibilities. We call, you know, it is until I can come at this with finishing the studies that we're doing. But one thing is very clear. This object, I call it blue bonnet because it reminds me of the blue bonnet flower in Texas when I lived in Texas.
Uh-huh.
It has that kind of coloration. And but it's clearly close to the sun, but orbiting some other body, not the sun. Because it does not track with the sun. Does not track at all. And whatever it is orbiting is going to become obvious one way or the other, because what I can say is that we're looking at this in the, and as this thing is arced over, it started getting bigger in size. So I know that when we've been looking at this, it's on the side of the orbit that is furthest away from the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's arcing over, and it's on the side of its orbit that is closer to the Earth. So that's what we have there, and we're tracking it. We watch it every day, and I'm posting the videos and so that people can see it and decide for themselves. We're sharing the information how to do it. We really wish people, you know, and we do have a lot of really talented folks that are jumping into this, and they're sending in stuff to us that's really stellar, and I really appreciate these people immensely. And hopefully, if we can wake up a few more souls in time to run off to Costco and buy beans and rice, hey, we've done our job.
I want to open the telephone lines. You and I will continue talking, but I'd like to invite the audience to join in this conversation. And the way you do that is you pick up your telephone and you enter these numbers in this order. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. If you're calling from east of the Rockies or west of the Rockies or on top of the Rockies, that is the number. 623-444-5889. What do you think about this, folks? those who are listening, you're not able to watch our TV channel at the moment, you can still see the picture. Go to my website and scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show. There it is. That's the picture. Go over to Yowza, that's YOWUSA.com, and scroll down just a little bit, you'll find the video that he's been referring to, that Marshall's been referring to, and you can watch it, and you'll see all the pictures there as well. But what do you think about this, ladies and gentlemen? Is you think this is the blue kachina that the Hopi talk about? Do you think that this is maybe itself Planet X? Not Nibiru in that case, because Nibiru is red. So maybe Planet X itself is blue. Who knows? And maybe Planet 11 is Nibiru. I mean, you know, the red one. But anyway, what do you think? 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. And if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada and you would like to participate in this conversation, we want you to. You can either call us or you can use the additional option for those who are outside of the USA and outside of Canada. It's called Flash Message. And to do that, go to my website, scroll down until you see the picture about tonight's show, and you'll see a link right above it that says Flash Message. Now, I've just gotten a flash message that says from Ireland, in Clinton in Ireland, says the TV channel is down in Ireland. I don't know. We are broadcasting. We are on the air, and we do have people watching, so I don't know what to tell you, Clinton. We had somebody in Arkansas the other night that, I think it was Arkansas, that said the channel was down there. That's not, I appreciate you telling me. However, it's not something under my control. It is, however, under the control of a lot of people out there, and some of whom probably don't want us to be doing this show. But thank you, Clinton, for letting us know that. 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889 is the telephone number. And Marshall Masters is here and willing to take your comments and answer your questions. There is an object in the sky, folks. The picture of that object I've been showing tonight, as I said, Clinton, if you can't see it because the TV channel is down, well, go over to the website, scroll down, and look at the picture about tonight's show. That's it. That's the picture. And you can see that object in the sky. This is daytime. It's not infrared. And it's, as Marshall has described for us, not a reflection. It is a celestial object. Marshall?
Yes.
Down at the Neumeier station in Antarctica, they have gotten pictures of some object, spherical object, crossing the sky. It's not the moon. It's not the sun. Do you think it's this thing?
Could very well be. I know that, you know, with some of those cameras down there, particularly ones that are being operated by the U.S. government, that you wind up seeing things happen that are very strange. We were actually tracking on Neumeier some very interesting imagery, and I was on a Skype conference, and right in the middle of the conference, there was a huge redaction on the archive of the site where they went in and masked a lot of images, cropped them, did a lot of stuff very fast, very quick, kind of sloppy, to cover up and make it unusable. And it was like in real-time response to our conversation. So,
you don't mean someone was listening in and heard what you guys were talking about, huh? Hard for me to believe that. You mean right here in the land of the free?
Hello, in the land of the free? You know, I can remember a time when armed predator drones used to fly over someone else's country.
Yeah, that's called karma. What you do to other people comes home.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and particularly Janet Napolitano, they're going, why are you buying 2 billion rounds of ammunition for non-military agencies? So, I mean, yeah, we know the preparation is going on. All of this is happening. But in general, there's not that large a share of the population that wants to see that. You know, like I said, they crawl under the covers. If the monsters can't see them, they're not going to get them.
Uh-huh.
And, but pulling the covers over your head's really not going to help you. And I think for those folks that are looking at this, it's so easy to make just a lot of, particularly I always hear all kinds of, well, it's in front of the clouds, it's behind the clouds, it's around the clouds, it's this, it's that. And again, if you watch it for a long period of time, all right, actually sit and watch it. Now, the thing with debunkers is when I get one-on-one with the debunkers, I can usually just whip them like a rented mule because I know what they're doing. They look at it for about 2 seconds and go, ooh, me no likey. All right. And then they're going to fish around for something that's going to justify a pretext, and they're going to debunk it. Well, it is because of this, that, and the other thing. And they'll go, yeah, see? There. It's a reflection because of this, this, and this. And I ask them, fine. So, if it was not a reflection, what would we see? They say, oh, you wouldn't see this, this, and this. You'd see that, that, and that.
Ah. All right, we have to take a break. We'll pick up there with the debunkers when we come back. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest this evening, Marshall Masters. Marshall, if you don't mind, let's leave the debunkers for just a moment and take this telephone call.
Groovy.
All right. Groovy. I like that word. By the way, that song that just played, folks, that's out of the hundreds of songs that I have in our database here. That's truly one of my favorites. That's a tight band. I love it. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. If you'll tell us your first name, where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Rusty from Michigan. Hey, Rusty, yeah. Did you see the message I left you on Skype?
No, I did not.
Be sure you check that.
Okay, I will.
All right.
Hi, Marshall.
Yeah, hi.
What was that website again? You said that we could go and see this thing.
All the links are on my site at youwusa.com. Also, you can use the twosunsinthesky.com. That'll actually take you straight to that page. But either way, youwusa.com, you'll see it right up there at the top of the homepage. Link right into it. Now, I have links there that'll take you to the Turrialba webcam page. That's the one we go to every day. Also, there's one there for the meteorological site. That's real helpful. Now, you know, what you want to do is figure out whatever your time is relative to, say, around 3 o'clock Central Standard in Turrialba. And make sure you check what the weather is that day. It's a high humidity area. It really surprises me that even at that elevation, it's, you know, over 90 degrees humidity quite often. And when that's happening, it's usually not going to be a good viewing day. One of the things you have to keep in mind with this is that, you know, the purpose of the surveillance camera there is really to focus on the active vent in the volcano. That's the one that particularly you'll see it at night when the camera switches into infrared mode, and you'll see it just really lights up. It's got quite a distinctive heat bloom. But when you're looking at it during the day, what you have to keep in mind is it's a very dynamic atmospheric environment. You have venting from the volcano, so you have these vapors and steam. You're going to have small passing clouds. All of these are going to be tens of meters thick, and their density is going to vary. And then on top of that, you have cloud banks that are going to be tens of kilometers thick. So, and all of this is in motion. You see that. So I usually like to, I found, you know, when you're around an 80% humidity is when you start getting into better viewing times. But also it's like Northern California, you know, if you don't like the weather, wait 10 minutes. But that's the general thing. Look for the weather. You'll observe blue bonnet. And, you know, and what you do is you just sit there and look at it. Just observe it. Don't try and analyze what you're seeing. Don't try and, you know, spot something and jump to it. What you're really wanting to do is you want to observe how the object moves naturally through the sky. One of the first things you'll notice is it has a daylight side. And that daylight side, whether it is south of the ecliptic or north of the ecliptic, is always facing the sun. And okay. The object is also, when it moves, it tracks, but it, and it's in the same area as the sun, but it doesn't track directly with the sun. Matter of fact, sometimes you can, you'll see it where the sun will close on the object as it comes just to sunset and it disappears off the horizon. And those are really stunning pictures. Sometimes we get those and they're just really amazing where, you know, you're seeing the sun closing on this. If it's a reflection of the sun, as the sun's coming down, it's going to come down like this. It's going to track that reflections. And you'll see those other reflections. They'll track and they'll dance and they'll change around, you know, whereas what happens, here's the sun, here's blue bonnet, and it's coming down, going to the horizon, but they tend to close and they don't track the same. So that's how we know it's in orbit around something else. And okay. When you start looking at it, you get a feel for it. And that's how, you know, until I did that, I have to be honest with you. You know, I was just, I was blowing it off. But this guy was really insistent. Because he said, I'm sitting here, I've been watching these surveillance cameras for years. And he said, I never saw this object before. And he's always watching it because he lives at the base of this volcano. And it's there so that the people who live there know when the heck to get out of Dodge.
Okay, Rusty, you have another question or comment?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this particular planet, I guess I call it, that you're looking at is just significance because it's something you haven't normally seen before?
It's something we haven't seen. It's not a cataloged object. It's not any of our planets. It's not any stars. It's nothing that it's not a cataloged object.
So do you think it has just suddenly appeared, or has it been there and we just haven't seen it before, or, you know, noticed it?
Well, folks, you know, it snuck up on us, hasn't seen. You know, it started in 2010. There was this fellow, his name was Rodolfo, and he was doing captures of the webcam that were very, very good. And the first surveillance camera on Turrialba was actually not the current high-definition camera. It was a standard-definition camera, NTSC. And so it doesn't have the same resolution. And also, the standard definition camera that was in use in 2010 is pointed in a slightly different direction. The camera we have now is west by southwest, whereas the old camera was pointed directly southwest.
Okay. Now,
and so that really, you know, for people that are saying it's grease smears on the lens and whatever, well, how do you replicate the same exact grease smear with two completely different camera systems pointed in different directions over time?
Right. Now, you mentioned about when you was on this other show or whatever that they was making changes to this website. So I'm assuming if this thing makes a grand appearance, as it were, that they're probably going to shut this web, they're going to shut the web down in reference to this. How else are we going to know, or can we obtain information when this is happening?
Well, the reason why my video, and trust me, We talked about this as researchers because I remember first rule of Planet X, the minute something interesting shows up, it disappears.
Right.
And that was the reason why I put such a Herculean effort into my first video, 50 minutes long, all right, and accumulated a lot of information. Because when I put it up there, basically I turned it into a tar baby. If they shut down that surveillance camera, it would have been instantaneous confirmation we had found something serious. And so it's less damaging to leave it up and to hype all kinds of cockamamie theories. Mm-hmm. But if they take it down, then all of a sudden, why do they take it down? And there's also another reason, too. This webcam is maintained by a Costa Rican university. And so I think it's beyond the reach of NASA to shut it down. Otherwise, if they could, they would.
So there's, other than on the net, there's no way for us to receive information about this thing. Then, like, is there a public science publication or something of that nature?
Well, you can get a lot of information about these volcanoes and where they're at and the universities that put it up. All of that is information. It's very clearly there. I'll also say that I think
what he's asking about here, though, is mm-hmm. once this thing starts to be very visible and undeniable to everybody, all of this stuff on the internet about it is going to disappear. So then, where are we going to get updates and information about it?
You know, as I've been doing this, I'm seeing this unfolding in a different way. Because, like I said, it doesn't matter what we publish, what we find, what people can see with their eyes. Mm-hmm. The cognitive dissonance is so powerful. Cognitive dissonance, fancy way of saying, don't confuse me with facts. I've made up my mind. People don't want to see the bad news. They don't want to see it coming. You know, Hitler wrote Mein Kampf and everyone laughed. Yeah, he'll never do it. He followed the plan. Okay? Did everything he was going to, you know, what he said he wanted to set out to do. That's what he set out to do in Mein Kampf. So it's the same thing here, caller. If people, even if they're seeing it, the reactions are going to be, well, let's see how this turns out, or,
yeah,
I don't
want
to see it.
But what about folks like Rusty here,
right?
Who's not doing that, and he's saying, I'm going to want more information about this as it develops. However, once it becomes visible for everyone, all the information is going to disappear. Where am I going to get my information?
It's hard to say if the information is going to disappear. I think one of the things that is holding, the reason why this surveillance camera feed hasn't been changed, and also keep in mind, it would be a very simple matter for them to just take that camera and point it down into the mouth of the volcano and show nothing in the sky so that they could do something that would make it completely unsuitable for our purposes. You know, that hasn't happened. It hasn't been tampered with because we've put too much information out on the web right now. As it goes on, you're going to be able to monitor it. You're looking at it. If you're following the webcam at Turrialba and all of a sudden that feed goes down, what does that tell you? All right? There's always plausible deniability. They say, well, we ran out of money, the camera broke, or whatever. There's always some sort of nonsense. There's always some sort of plausible deniability. But the point is, plausible deniability inevitably kicks in just before something disappears, something you want to find. Mm. So don't buy the excuses. That's the reason why, with all of this, I just keep repeating again and again, believe nothing. Observe everything. That's it. Just see it in situ. See it as it lays, as anthropologists will say. So, and archaeologists. So that's, to me, the key thing. And eventually, when it does appear, then I think there'll be very good cover stories put into place. Now, they're already telling us that Comet Ison, which will appear late this year, will be several times brighter than the moon. It's going to be an incredibly bright object. Cooking up a cover story and just saying, well, that's not a planet, that's just a comet or it's something else. And, you know, they don't have to be all that technically precise. All they have to do is, you know, give people what they really want. Just give me something that I can say, I'm pulling the covers over my head and I'm comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. And that's what really, you know, that's what the people really want. So for you, if you are actively in survival preparation, then this is just part of everything that's on the table in front of you. And you're looking at this. You also need to be looking, however, at what's happening locally in your area. So whatever your normal threats and risks are, whether it's volcanism, seismicity, tsunamis, at this point, I think that folks living up in Cascadia and also folks living down in Southern California should be, you know, should check their supplies in case there's a major quake event.
All right, we have to step away for a break. Rusty, do you have more?
No, that's it for me.
Thanks. All right, thanks. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach for this evening. We only have a few minutes left in tonight's show. We do have a flash message with two questions and a caller on hold, so we'll have to keep, Marshall, you'll have to keep your responses pretty brief. So, caller, hang on just a moment. Let's get the first question on the flash message. Has anyone, this is from Ross in Scotland. Hi, Kevin and Marshall. Has anyone gone up to the mountaintop in person to view the object with their own eyes? That would completely remove the possibility of it being some sort of lens anomaly.
Absolutely. I've been asking for that for months. Nobody wants to do it.
Okay.
Find me somebody. That's the reason why, Kevin, I was so excited about coming on your show. Because when it comes to an international audience, you are the 800-pound gorilla. I'm hoping someone out there knows somebody in Costa Rica, and they pick up the phone, and they go ringy-dingy-dingy-dingy. Hey, I got a fun idea for you. You want to throw a wrench at these wacko Americanos? Have some fun. Go to the volcano at Iruzu and see what you see.
Very good.
Nobody wants to do it.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Marshall, I hope I'm not blindsiding you here, but back in 1973 and 74, the International Astronomical Union, I think it was them, actively suppressed information about three planets in our solar system that were not among the ones we know about.
Mm-hmm.
What is the possibility that what you're seeing is one of those planets?
Hey, you know what? That was Ross's second question. So there you go. We got two people asking that question. We know for sure they suppressed it because their annual report said that they decided to, and they used the word, suppress that information.
Well, then, that's interesting because are they saying were those three planets orbiting our sun?
Yes.
In that report?
Yes.
Well, whatever blue bonnet is, it is not orbiting the sun. It is orbiting another object which is orbiting the sun.
Ah, okay.
So, it could be anything. And I really find that really fascinating. There's all kinds of cover-up. We have a great article on our site about how the press was, and the media was doing a fabulous job on all of this. You go back in the news accounts, in the 50s it started after Velikovsky, but in the 60s and 70s really caught fire. And it was after Harrington, the naval astronomer, was assassinated, and I believe he was assassinated, and that was like all of a sudden it just threw ice water in it and everybody shut up. I mean, you can trend the conversation, what was happening in the open media, huge number of reports which we have on the site, and with Harrington's death, it like went off a cliff. Literally went off a cliff. Everybody knew. Talk about this, you die. So yes, caller, there's a lot of suppression. And I appreciate your telling me about that.
International Astronomical Union is who he's talking about. They have a very strict protocol for the announcement of anything out there. And in their annual report, I forget the year, too. It was in the 70s. Mm-hmm. Their annual report, one of our faithful listeners found this and sent it to me, and we did a show on this. Their annual report says that there were several minor planets found in our solar system, and that we decided to suppress that information, meaning they did not even notify all the other astronomers that are members. They decided to suppress that information and just send it to their minor planets division or something like that, minor planets department or whatever.
Right.
And so we know that there are planets in our solar system that they're not telling us about. They have admitted that.
Mm-hmm. And this, you know, it could very well be that. I mean, for me, I'm not coming at this and I'm saying I want to prove it's the Blue Kachina. I'm not saying I want to prove it's Nibiru or prove it it's this or prove that it's that. Again, believe nothing, observe everything. We are just simply observing a large object. It is a planet-sized object, very clearly. It's a large planet-sized object. It is close to the sun, and it's in orbit around some other body, which in turn, that other object, that other body it is orbiting, is what is orbiting our sun. And so, if we just keep an eye on it, keep tracking it, whatever it's going to do, it'll be self-evident. That's the reason why we're going into progression studies now. We have enough information in our database, and we can go back and say, all right, we're looking for a data set, all right, of maybe 30 or 40 images that we want to take out of some 15 or 1600 that we've amassed, not only from our own efforts, but from others, including we found the United States Air Force Academy that had an archive of this imagery from 2012. And we downloaded that as fast as we could find it. And all of it is really showing this very clear, consistent pattern of moving up, you know, from the south to the north and back down again. And when we're finished doing our study, which we want to go another two more weeks because we're really, it's getting interesting. The object's really busting some moves. And we want to see how that goes. When I'm finished with that, we're going to put all the plots up in a new video and announce that.
And you put those up on your website?
It'll be on YouTube.
On YouTube.
Right. It'll be on my site and YouTube.
What is
my
your YouTube channel?
Is Yowbooks, Yowbooks.
Yeah, and Yao stands for your own world.
Your own world.
Mm-hmm. So Yao Books, youtube.com/Yao Books
yep.
is the channel.
Yeah.
Or people can go over to your website.
If they go to Yowza, that'll be, you know, actually the only thing you need is one URL, twosunsinthesky.com. Spell out the word two.
T-W-O, suns, S-U-N-S. InTheSky.com.
Two suns in the sky. That's it.
All right. You know, every time you come on, I say, man, I hope you're dead wrong.
I've noticed that over the years. Yeah. You always tell me dead wrong, and I put up with it because I love your music.
Well, I'm not saying you are dead wrong. I'm saying I hope you are.
So am I. God, I don't want to see it. If this is,
do you know how?
If this
how,
is the Blue Kachina, mm-hmm. all right. This turns out to be the Blue Kachina. What follows it is dying time.
For right? somebody, not me.
Yeah, it's going to depend. I mean, it's you're talking about a time that's really going to be difficult.
Yeah.
And for those of you living out in the country and if you have a well, And if it's a shallow well, it'll go dry. Now's a good time to drill down to that artesian water. And for those of you at home, stockpile some water, you know, and that's going to be real essential, because this object is coming through, and this has been discovered by the Skyview team, and there's a huge iron dust field that comes through with this thing. And if we pass through that iron dust, it's the first plague of Exodus. The waters turn blood red. You know, you want to see, if you take this Exodus story, all right, the 10 plagues of Exodus, and you take them out of allegorical order and put them into scientific order, it makes perfect sense. And starting with that happening to the water.
We 10 seconds left.
All right. So, folks, first off, just go to YOWUSA.com, find the links, go sit down and just watch this for a while and decide for yourself.
Okay, Marshall Masters, thank you for being with us this evening. Stay on the line with me for just a moment, and as I bring this in for a landing. Thanks for being with us this evening, folks. I hope you have enjoyed the show. It's been very informative, hasn't it? My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. And you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again.